So the couple that we have speaking this morning is a couple that, especially in this community, needs no introduction, but will go through the formality anyway. They're high school sweethearts. As many of you know, they graduated from Highland Park High School in 2006. After that, Ellen went off to Texas A&M, and Clayton was drafted as the 7th overall pick by the Los Angeles Dodgers in the Major League Baseball draft. Since then, they have both been growing in their relationship with each other and their relationship with Christ. In 2010, they were married. They spend most of their time in Los Angeles, but are happy to continue to call Dallas their home. The bio sheet that they sent me said that Clayton was a 2-time Cy Young Award winner. They can update that along with a National League MVP from this year. One of the things that I love the most out of the bio that they sent me is it says that the award that Clayton cherishes the most is the 2012 Roberto Clemente Award, which is given to a Major League Baseball player in response to their humanitarian work. This is a lot about them. I think one of the reasons that a lot of us are here this morning is not just because of what Clayton does on the baseball diamond, but because of what Ellen and Clayton both do around the world. It's one of the most impressive things about this couple. Their work that they do around the globe, in particular in Zambia. Ellen has been going to Zambia every year since 2007. Clayton began joining her in 2010. They began the Clayton Kershaw Challenge, which we're going to hear a little bit more about this morning, in response to the need that they saw in Africa. And in 2012, they opened the Arise Home, which again, I think that we'll hear more about. Couldn't be more happy to welcome them this morning. Join me in doing so, Ellen and Clayton Kershaw.
All right, good morning. Thank you all for coming out. Just want to talk a little bit today about what he was talking about, a little bit about baseball, a little bit about our heart for Africa. But more than anything, just kind of what it means to have a heart for God and what you can use your passions and platforms for. That's so important to Ellen and I both, because it was hard for us at first. So I'll just tell you a little bit about me growing up here, and then I'll let Ellen fill in the blanks. She's a much better public speaker than I am, so she'll be really good at it. But let me pray real quick, and then we'll get started. Dear God, just thank you for this time. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to speak with you, Lord. And just help me do your will here, Lord. And if I stray from it, please let him forget it. In Jesus' name, amen. So, I grew up here. I moved into the third grade, and right around that time, my parents got divorced, and I started going to Bradfield over there. And it was kind of, if you can say, it was a normal divorce. I got to see my dad, you know, on the weekends and stuff, and it was fine. You know, it wasn't easy, but you know, I got through it. And then as I started going through high school, you know, started seeing him less and less, and you know, I really didn't see him at all in high school. And so that was kind of a tough transition for me, especially as baseball was getting going and things started moving faster in my life. I really started leaning towards other people. It's kind of right around the time I met Ellen, which was so huge in my life for me, and the group of friends that I had too. So it's so important, you know, as you all know, being dads, I'm about to be a dad too. We're all worried about, you know, how our kids can, who they associate themselves with. You know, it's a scary thing for me to think. I'm about to have a girl next month and can't even imagine thinking about dates or anything like that already. So that's so scary. But, you know, for me, I was so fortunate to have a group of friends that I do. I still see them today. They were on TV the last month, and they got made fun of a ton for it, so it was awesome. But they really just kind of raised me, honestly. I wasn't home a whole lot in high school. I got to be at other friends' house all the time, and, you know, I wouldn't have had it any other way. It was so great. And Ellen, too. I was with Ellen. Her family took me in like my own. I started spending, you know, holidays with them in high school and things like that, and I think I ate dinner over there a lot. I owe the Melsons a lot of dinners. But just the way that they reflected Christ on me, I think that was the most important thing. I didn't talk about it a whole lot growing up. You know, I went to church here, got confirmed here. But I didn't really know what it meant to be a Christian. I didn't really know, you know, here in this community, which is great, but at the same time, it can be a little bit challenging for a kid, is everybody calls themselves a Christian. That's just kind of what you do. You know, it's just the norm. Everybody in the community kind of does that for the most part. And for me, this is kind of what I did. I just kind of went through the motions, called myself a Christian, and didn't really have that heart change. And it wasn't until high school, probably I would say sophomore or junior year. Started going to different things. You know, I went to FCA because all my friends went to FCA, and that's just what you did. And started really thinking about this Jesus guy. I think I started getting old enough, more mature, to understand that this is a decision. This isn't just something you do, you walk through. And around that time, baseball started becoming really prominent in my life. You know, I started worrying about college. You know, the finances of that. How are my mom and I going to be able to afford to go to college? You know, obviously it's one more thing in this community, which is so great, but everybody goes to college, which is awesome. But it's sometimes it was really scary for me because I didn't know if that was a possibility for me. And started worrying a lot, started being really anxious in my life. And, you know, obviously God calls us not to do that. And so he really had to show me. He said, hey, don't worry about this. I got this thing called baseball for you. You know, you're going to be taken care of. And so I ended up signing to go to A&M just because she went there. I didn't do any research. I had no idea. I didn't look into it at all. I just kind of picked. It was probably a blessing I didn't end up going, but it would have been fine. And then our senior year came, and kind of the same things. You know, I needed to be able to provide for my family, and college would have been a great opportunity, but, you know, we needed a little more financial support than just me going to college. And so once again, started worrying, having those same fears, like, God, what do you have planned for my life? I don't see how this is going to work out. And he kept giving me baseball, you know, time and time again. And I think once I got drafted, I really understood that God had his hand on my life. And that was something that it took me a while to figure out. And ever since then, the question I always come up with is why? You know, why did he give me the ability to throw a baseball? You know, I didn't do anything to deserve that. The talent to do that. You know, I don't have any reason to be able to do that. He just gave that to me. And then I really started thinking, well, why did he do that? Is it for me to be able to win games and do all this stuff? And no, because he doesn't care about that. And started thinking a little bit more about that. And I'm going to let Ellen kind of step in here and tell her story, and I'll get back to that.
So Clayton and I met when we were, I think it was the 8th or 9th grade, and our friends were friends with each other, and we started hanging out. But the coolest part about it is I got to really watch his dream come to fruition. I remember we were in this 9th grade freshman leadership class, and we were all going around the room and telling everybody what our hopes and dreams and aspirations were for our future. And, you know, everybody was going around the room and probably giving the cookie cutter answer of what the teacher wanted to hear. And when we got around to Clayton, he very boldly stated it at, I guess, as a 14-year-old, that he wanted to be a professional baseball player. And the teacher, as kind as he was, wanted to make a point that had some very unrealistic expectations with it, that the odds were kind of not in his favor. And he kind of put, he kind of put that into perspective for Clayton and just said, you know, the odds really are 1 in a million for that ever happening. And basically trying to give him the motivation of, you could be the 1 in a million, but you've got to work at it really, really hard. And I remember that night I saw a spark light in Clayton, and he was going to be determined that that is what he wanted to do with his life, no matter what the odds were and if they weren't in his favor. And around that same time, I feel like the Lord really put something on my heart. And it was in the 8th grade, and I had come back from school, and I was watching this special on TV, and it actually was about Africa. And I think at that time in my life, we're all very self-consumed. Our world revolves more around our friendships and our social plans on Friday night than ever having a greater perspective and trying to figure out what the Lord could do with our lives. And it was that moment that I think that my perspective just expanded, and I realized that there were kids living half a world away that lived so incredibly differently from me, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't wrap my head around it. And I felt the Lord kind of spark something in me that day that took a long time to come to fruition. I struggled for the next 5 years with doubt and feeling like someone like me really couldn't make a difference in the overwhelming blanket of poverty that was Africa. You see, millions of kids, you hear the stats, you see the pictures of these kids suffering over there, and then you know that there are people, ministries and missionaries and churches that are spending a fortune and a lifetime over there trying to make an impact. And so, of course, me at 14 years old was thinking, surely there's nothing that the Lord could use me to make a difference in these kids' lives. And yet, much like Clayton, the Lord just continued to knock on my heart and continued to prepare me for the next 4 or 5 years until I was ready to finally take that leap of faith. So I had gone to A&M. Clayton was playing minor league baseball, and the anxiety of actually not going to Africa became more overwhelming than just getting on a plane and going. And so I found a ministry over in Zambia that I felt comfortable with and had talked my parents into letting me go at age 18 by myself. And I remember landing on the ground of Zambia and for the first time just feeling this overwhelming sense of peace come over me, that I was exactly where the Lord would have me. I walked around the villages that day and I saw these children, and all of a sudden, that overwhelming blanket of poverty that scared me for so long, it became this one child. And I always tell people, the first time you hold a Zambian orphan, your entire life changes, because you look into this child's eyes and it becomes about that one child. You know their name, you know their story, you see their circumstances, and it doesn't seem so overwhelming anymore, because I think I realized if the Lord could use me just in that one child's life, that would be me fulfilling my purpose that he has given me. And I think sometimes we look at the big picture and we get overwhelmed and really scared of trying to make a dent in it. But I'm kind of living proof that if you just take that first really small step, the doors that the Lord will open, and sometimes it is in the eyes of a 9-year-old child. And that leads me to tell y'all about this girl named Hope. I got to meet her on my 3rd or 4th trip over to Zambia. I had gone all throughout my college experience. And one of the last times I went in college, I met this girl named Hope. She was 9 years old. And actually, she had a really similar story to the million other orphans that were in Zambia. She is HIV positive, and she's a double orphan, meaning both of her parents had either passed away or abandoned her. So Hope had really just learned to survive on her own. And at such a young age, it just is, it's heartbreaking that so many kids are having to figure out that survival mode. She had built up so many walls. She was just calloused when I met her, and her eyes were completely clouded because of malnutrition. But then also, I just think there was a ton of emotional barriers that she had built up, and she just was not going to be willing to let anybody in, because everybody that had ever been a part of her life had left her. And so Hope and I immediately connected. I remember sitting there with her and just looking in her eyes and asking her to tell me her story, and us spending an entire week just getting to know each other, so that by the time it was time for me to leave, I remember calling Clayton from Zambia, which is not an inexpensive phone call, and saying, "Clayton, we've got to do something. I don't know exactly what. I don't know how we change this girl's life, but we have to do something. I just can't leave her in the state that she's in and send her back to the streets." And Clayton, without a second thought, just said, "You know, let's do whatever it takes. We'll sponsor her. We'll make sure that she's taken care of while you're not there." And so we began a monthly sponsorship program with Hope, and we knew that she was getting education and food and a discipleship program. But when Clayton and I went back for the first time together 6 months later, we went and checked in on Hope, and she was healthier. You could tell that her English had improved, and the cloudiness in her eyes was coming up, was lightening up a little bit, because we knew she was getting the proper nutrition. But the thing that she didn't have was a place to call home. She still didn't know the unconditional love of a family, and she didn't have the parents that we have over here that we just so take for granted. And so it was on that plane flight home with Clayton that we came up with the idea of Kershaw's Challenge. And truly, we stand here today and we just can't believe how far the Lord has brought it. It is nothing that we ever imagined was possible. It was nothing that we ever tried to create out of our own out of thin air. But it just came from the idea of needing to fulfill a very basic need in the life of one child. And I think that sometimes that's where his greatest plans start, is you just take something that is that can seem so small, and he turns it into something that is so much greater than what we could have ever expected. And so Clayton decided that he was going to start striking out to serve, and that he felt very called to use his platform to play baseball and give it back and glorify the Lord, because ultimately he realized that it's a God-given talent he was given, and if he's not using it to glorify the Lord and use that platform, then you know it's going to feel so fleeting. And so we started Kershaw's Challenge with a hope and the dream that we would build Hope a home and kids just like her. And to kind of speed the story up a little bit, we're 4 years into Kershaw's Challenge, and 2 years ago we were able to open the doors of, we call it a Rise Home. And the first 10 kids moved in 2 years ago, right around Christmas Day, and 5 girls and 5 boys. And we have 2 house parents that run the house, but I mean, truly love these kids as if they were their own. And Clayton and I got to go over and visit. We've been there every year now since we've been married. We had to take a year off this year with the baby coming, but it was incredible to see 2 weeks after these kids had moved into this house, for the first time they had a bed. And we just take that so for granted over here. They had 3 meals a day, and they sit around this long, big family table, and they say their prayers. And I mean, they're a family in every sense of the word, and they cling to each other as if they've been a family their entire lives. And it's just been one of the coolest things to see this transformation of children. We add to the house every now and then, and actually now we're trying to build our second home over there so that we can have one for girls and one for boys, and really feel like we are raising godly men and godly women. And especially as these kids become teenagers, we just really want to instill that into them. And the other thing that we noticed is, you know, we get to do a trip to Africa once a year, but really we're spending the majority of our time in Los Angeles and in Dallas. And so that was really important for us, that we continue to pour into the communities where we are. And I think that that's what Clayton and I always try to say, the challenge part of Kershaw's Challenge is, you know, not all of us have the platform of a baseball player, but we do all have gifts and talents and passions that the Lord has given us that are unique to us, that only we can personally fulfill. And so, you know, especially when we go out and talk to kids, which we love to do, we love talking to FCAs and high schoolers and middle schoolers, because we wish that we had known at such a young age that the Lord could use us even at that age, even when we didn't feel like we had a whole lot to bring to the table. The Lord very much can still use us based on the talents that he's given us and the abilities he's given us. And so, you know, Clayton's challenge is he strikes out to serve. He uses his God-given ability to give back to others. And what we try to do is encourage others to come alongside of Kershaw's Challenge and use whatever the Lord has given them, whether it's running or reading or, you know, playing sports or being a mom, you know, whatever that may be, whatever, wherever the Lord has you, you do have a sphere of influence, and you can make an impact on a daily basis that has eternal value. And so that's the challenge part of Kershaw's Challenge. And Clayton and I wanted to start giving back to the communities where we were. So we've partnered with incredible ministries here in Dallas, like Mercy Street, that I know that so many of the churches in this community are involved in. And we also have a ministry out in Los Angeles that we're partnered with, as well as another one in Zambia, where we're able to provide surgeries for kids who are disabled with club foot or cleft palate or hydrocephalus. And we just go ahead and we fund 100 of the surgeries this past year so that these kids are able to come into the hospital and leave completely free of charge. But it's also such an incredible ministry. While these kids spend time at the hospital, they are ministered to and they're encouraged and their families are brought in so that they're really being spiritually poured into while they're there. So that's a little snippet of what Kershaw's Challenge is and where it came to be. And I guess just what Clayton and I always say is our call to action at the end when talking to Kershaw's about Kershaw's Challenge is everybody here in this room has something that the Lord has given them, a talent, a passion, a purpose. And I don't feel like we're ever too young or too old or not well equipped in order to use it. We just have to sometimes take that first step. And I can tell you, I know the first step is the hardest. It took me about 5 or 6 years to get up the guts to take it. But I think sometimes the smallest steps can lead to the greatest things by the grace of God. So I'll pass it back over to Clayton, and he'll finish telling y'all more about his platform with baseball and kind of where the Lord has him these days.
Yeah, well, you hear Ellen talk about talents. That's the passion that she speaks with is something that's a talent. And, you know, the gifts that she's been given. You know, small talk's probably not my forte, and she makes everybody feel like they're the most important person in the room. And that's a gift from God. And I've learned that over the years in baseball is that people, I always ask them the question to myself, well, how do you glorify God playing baseball or doing whatever you're doing? What does that mean, glorify God? You know, people say it a lot. Well, you know, as long as you're glorifying God, you're doing what you're supposed to do. I'm like, okay, that's great. Well, how do I do that? Do I just go up and talk about Jesus every day and hope they hear me? And if they don't, well, I did my best. You know, God's got it from here. That's a question that I had because, you know, everybody in baseball is coming from all walks of life, different backgrounds. I'm sure in the business world it's the exact same way. So I asked myself that question a lot. And the answer is it's through your attitude and it's through your character. And, you know, baseball is so fun. I love baseball. You know, the second I don't go to the baseball field with a smile on my face, I probably need to quit. And I hope people see that through me, that, you know, I have fun playing this game because I realize it could end at any second. And then, you know, the way you act at the field, the way you interact with your teammates, the way you energize your teammates can really reflect God through that. And I started thinking about that a little bit more, and I only get to play once every 5 days, so they're not going to see me play very often. So what else can I do? What else can I do? And the answer is just be there. You know, I think that's so important in whatever we're doing in life is just being there. You know, we're there a lot, guys. We're there like, I don't know, 10 hours a day, every day. We get sick of each other fast. A lot of big personalities. A lot of people not always wanting to, you know, hear what you have to say, especially when it comes to Jesus, because that can be pretty convicting. So for me, I just try and have a great attitude, and it's not easy. You know, you have a lot of failures in this game, and, you know, when people ask me, you know, just that one time, I remember I was in an outfield shagging batting practice in Cincinnati, and a player on our team, you know, I'd been with him for probably a year and a half, and we were like the work friends, like, hi, how you doing in the halls, and kind of go our separate ways, and that was really about it. And he came up to me and he started talking to me in the outfield, which is pretty rare. And he just asked me a simple question, you know, well, why don't you cuss? And I was like, well, that's a really weird question. And he was like, yeah, I mean, I've never really heard you cuss other than through your glove when you get really mad. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry about that. And that opportunity right there sparked the answer. It's not because I'm trying to do the right thing. It's just because, you know, you're trying to have a good testimony for other people around you, and if you're cussing a bunch, it probably hurts your testimony a little bit. And so I told him that and told him a little bit about this guy named Jesus, who is my Savior. And over time, he moved on to a different team. Don't know where he stands with Jesus, but it's a really cool opportunity for me, and I remember that. And there's been different times throughout that. And then we got the complete other side, whereas they come at me and they say, hey, I hear you're a Christian. How could you be when they have all this science around? I get that a lot. I get that a ton with guys, which is funny to me. But it's always about, it's one teammate a year. And this year we had a guy, same thing. Is a pitcher of mine, so I spent a lot of time with him. And he constantly had questions. So smart, had read the Bible to disprove it. He reads all these other books, huge evolutionists, things like that, and he just kept pounding me with questions. And at the end of the season, this year, you know, he still never agreed with me, but he said, hey, I appreciate the way that you talked with me. I appreciate you never getting heated. I appreciate you never getting mad about my questioning your faith. And so that really meant a lot to me too, is that even though you might not connect, our job ultimately isn't to convert people. You know, that's God's job. But the way we react and the way our demeanor and countenance shows about our walk with Jesus can really affect people. And so just remember that going forward. I think that's one of the biggest things in my life in baseball is that there's so many different interactions. And that's part of the reason I love this game so much. There's so many different guys out there, which I'm sure in y'all's work environments is the same way. And so, you know, the last question I'll go back to that I ended with was why. And, you know, just why do I get to play this game? I think about it every day. Think about it. You know, I had a great season stats-wise, but, you know, I failed at the end. You know, I didn't win in the playoffs. And that's why, you know, that's the earthly reason why we all play this game is to win a World Series. And, you know, you end the season literally 5 minutes after. There's 50 reporters in front of your locker just wanting you to snap so bad. And they, I mean, I felt terrible that I had lost for our teammates. I felt terrible that our season was ending so quickly and abruptly like that. You know, you feel like you let everybody down. And so these reporters come in and they ask, golly, they ask the best, worst questions. You know, like, how'd you feel tonight? Well, not great, you know, not great. But they just, and I've had a lot of people come up to me after those interviews that they've seen and just saying, you know, we could tell that you were upset, but, you know, we appreciate the fact that, you know, and the reporter said the same thing, like, hey, we're just trying to do our jobs. But they really appreciated the fact that, you know, you didn't snap or you didn't, you treated them like you'd treat anybody else. And so that's one thing that the daily walk in baseball is something that I don't take for granted. It could end any second, and I know that. And the encounters you might have, it might be one smile or one wave or, hey, how you doing today? And that that changes somebody's day. And it's not always easy, but Ellen's the best that I've ever seen, and I'm trying to keep up with her on that. So just remember that going forward. That's really all I have. So thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And yeah, that's it. Thanks. Thank you. If y'all have any questions for Ellen or I, we'd love to answer them. I think we've got a few books down here for sale if y'all want to buy them. And then, yeah, that's it. So any questions? Yeah. Yeah, you know, people ask sometimes, you know, who's the leader on y'all's team, or you know, how do you be a role model? And I don't know the answer to that right off the top of my head as far as being a leader, but we have a chaplain. We don't get to go to church, obviously, on Sundays. We play day games, but we have a chaplain that comes in and does baseball chapel, and such a great guy. I actually went to the Dominican Republic with him 2 weeks ago on a mission trip, and it was really cool. We've got a bunch of teammates from the DR, and just seeing where they came from, I'll tell you what, that'll give you a different perspective. That's why they talk about money a lot, is because they don't come from it, and baseball's their only way out. But he was telling me a verse on that trip. We did a little like study after the and it's in Deuteronomy 17, verses 16 through 20. They're just about to, the chosen people are about to go into Israel, and they're talking about, well, they want a king because everybody else around the places has a king. And they're talking about what this king, and God kind of lays out what this king should do every day. And you shouldn't build up anything on earth. You should read the Bible every day. Write down all your commandments. And I started trying to apply that to my life. And it really hit home to me just what a leader can be is through your actions. And being like everybody else and not trying to lead. I think that was something that you know, when you think of a leader, you think of the guy yelling on the bench or the quarterback screaming at everybody or whatever it is, the boss telling everybody how to do things. But I think it's your ability to relate with everybody else is what a leader truly is. And so when I think of guys on our team that can go in and talk to every single person on our teammate and make them laugh or make them feel like they're important, I feel like that's what a leader is. And I think a role model is kind of the same way, you know, you see a kid on the rail or you give him a ball or something like that. You know, I think it's your ability to make people smile as opposed to what you're doing on and off the field. Obviously, you can really hurt your testimony with what you're doing off the field or something like that. But so I think that's really, really, really cool. It's just seeing how you can make people's days better, I guess would be the best way I would describe being a leader, especially in baseball when you're with each other a lot. Yeah.
First off, thank you again.
Oh, yeah.
I got a chance to read your book 2 months ago. It's outstanding. But could you tell the story about the first time you pitched?
First time I pitched? Yeah. yeah, I was in Zebulon, North Carolina in Double A. I started the game. I pitched one inning. I came out of the game. Zebulon's a great town, by the way, if y'all ever make it there. I pitched it one inning, and the coach or the manager came over and said, "Hey, you're done. I can't tell you why, but you're done." I was like, "Okay, well, what did I do? You know, I screwed up. I didn't do something I was supposed to." I had to go back to the clubhouse and wait 8 innings until the game ended for the manager to come in and be like, "Hey," he called me in after the game and said, "Hey, the general manager wants to talk to you on the phone," Ned Colletti at the time. And he said, "Hey," and I was like, "Oh, okay, I did something really bad. I think I got traded or I got sent down or something," because it doesn't really happen that often from Double A. And he called me in and said, "Hey, you're getting called up. You're pitching in 2 days on Sunday. Don't tell anyone. We haven't told the person that's getting cut." And so I can't tell my teammates. I can't tell anybody. I walk outside, and I call Alan right away. I'm like, "Hey, don't tell anybody, but get everybody to L.A. in 2 days if you can." We were dating at the time. So we got everybody out there Saturday night. Don't sleep a wink. Pitching a day game against the Cardinals Sunday. I don't remember any of it. I really don't. I was so nervous. I didn't throw up, but I wanted to. You sit down in the clubhouse and you kind of look around. And I mean, I was 20 and I'm seeing like Jeff Kent, who's 40 and just kind of mean. And no Nomar Garcia Parra and all these guys. And I'm just like, what am I doing here? And I ended up pitching okay. We ended up winning extra innings. But that was a crazy day. Ellen got... We had like 15 or 20 people out there, so it was a really, really cool day. It was pretty awesome. Yeah?
How do you guys, the two of you, manage your marriage together and kind of keep that isolated and sacred, given all that you have going on outside of just what a married couple of your age might be dealing with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll try to answer it, and then you go from there.
Yeah.
All right. I think the most important thing for us is just saying no sometimes. You know, I think that's I used to think no was a bad thing, because we love getting opportunities to do stuff, and the second you start pitching bad, all the opportunities probably go away, and so we know that too. But for us, it's just, we just really enjoy being at home. And so, for us to be able to carve out time during the off season where we don't have to travel, you know, we're not going anywhere for the next 2 months, which is awesome. We get to be home. Baseball season's tough because I'm away so much. So, try and do the best we can as far as carving out time in the mornings or whatever it may be. And then I think next year is going to be completely different too. Ellen and I both sleep pretty good, so it's going to be different for us during the season. But, I don't know, to be honest, if there's one specific thing that we do for our marriage. Ellen's been, a rock star as far as moving her whole life to LA. You know, that's not an easy transition. And, that's something that's really, really, important to me, is that she's comfortable out there. And so that's been huge for us. And then I think the other thing too is just to welcome everybody that comes out and try to make it as much like home as possible and try to be as much a family as we can.
I would add to that just by saying, I think the Lord has really blessed us with Kershaw's challenge. Actually, I think that never in a million years did I think that Africa and baseball could intersect in a way that it has. And before we were married, when we were engaged, I remember we both spent a lot of time in prayer trying to figure out how the Lord is going to be able to use my passion of going to Africa and his platform and passion for baseball, how we can use that together to develop our marriage and to really be able to both still chase after our dreams. And gosh, I just think of back to that plane ride where we, you know, the Lord gave us this vision for this ministry. And so even when we're out in LA and getting to do speaking engagements or service projects and a fundraiser event out in LA, it's really cool just to think that we're able to do something together that the Lord is very much the center and the foundation of, and it's a combination of both of our passions. And I think that that's been pretty incredible for us. The last thing is, I just think that it doesn't seem like a normal life from the outside, but it's kind of our normal. And, you know, for us, living three places a year is just kind of become the usual for us, and living out of suitcases. And, you know, home is just kind of where each other is and where we make it for the time being. So it does sometimes seem a little crazy, but it definitely has become our norm.
Very true. Yeah. You know, he's actually, I can say his name, right? It's okay. No?
Yeah.
His name's Kirk Dooley. He's a writer. Is it for the Dallas Morning News?
I think it's for something like that.
And it wasn't a class. It was like a freshman leadership elective class. The only reason I took it is because Ellen's mom signed her up, and I was trying to get in good graces. I don't even, it was like after school Monday night, so I was like, why would I want to do this? But it was, you know, I remember it. It worked. So,
I think he wrote an article afterwards about it, saying something like,
yeah,
one
he knows
in a million
he's part of our
something.
Story now. So he's probably trying
but,
to. Yeah.
I mean, he's such a good guy, and he reached out to Clayton. And
yeah,
no, I think he was trying to be more motivating than anything.
Yeah, I was mad at the time, but no hard feelings. Yeah. Yeah.
A quick sports question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never say I don't want to go up against anybody. You know, you never have to talk about it, but, you know, your mindset is that nobody's getting a hit off you today. You know, that's my mindset. You know, it's, I don't try to ever tell anybody, but that's, you know, you gotta kind of have that bulldog mentality a little bit. But guys that have some really good success off me in the past, Adam Dunn probably has the most home runs off of me. Just can't throw anything hard enough to get him out. He just hits it really far. And then he's like a lumberjack. He's so big. Who else gets some hits off me? A guy that got traded to the Astros, Dexter Fowler, probably has the best numbers off of me of anybody in the game. He used to play for the Rockies, so he's like 60 or 70 at bats, and he's hitting like 450. I don't know why I've asked him. He said he doesn't know either. So. Yeah.
How do you handle the other baseball wives and girlfriends?
They're great, actually. I think I went into this lifestyle with a little bit of a stigma, thinking that there was a stereotype with who they would be. Honestly, most of them are high school and college sweethearts. It, I think, is really sweet. I think it'd be really hard for these guys with the lifestyle that they lead to meet anybody once they're already in the major leagues. But we do chapel together on Sunday, and we've got a Bible study that meets together on Tuesday nights, and we do a service project once a month together that is organized through our beneficiary out in Los Angeles. And so really it's kind of a sweet little wives support group. We sit with each other every single night at games. We spend, you know, 3 to 4 hours a day together when the team is at home, and we travel a lot together when the team is away. Most all of them are moms. Clayton and I are kind of bringing up the tail end when it comes to having kids in baseball. So they've all been huge encouragements for us on what it looks like to be a parent away from family and friends, and what that looks like to have kids on the road and to take them wherever you are. And so they really have been extremely encouraging for us. And, you know, Clayton and I also realized the blessing of, we're one of the few couples that have gotten to be with the team, the same team from the beginning. So many of these players have been on, you know, 10 different teams and have been traded a million times, and they bounce around from season to season. And so they also just help us have the perspective of, gosh, we're just so lucky that we get to know that we're going to be in LA at least for a few more years and get to make some roots and everything. So these friendships are kind of transitional. They come and go really quickly, but for the most part, they've just been a huge blessing in my life because they understand more than my family and friends back home what this lifestyle looks like and how to remain level-headed. So I say that they're great. They're a great blessing.
Yeah.
I assume the baby will be born here.
Born here. Yeah. She'll be a Texan. Yeah. Yeah. She's due January 31st. So we report to spring training, like, I think it'll be around the February 20th. So I'll have at least a few weeks, and then she'll come meet me a couple weeks later. But she'll be a Texan at least, so that's good. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thanks. I'll tell you what, he asked just how would we keep building Kershaw's challenge. And, you know, I think, first of all, I want to thank everybody who had anything to do with the Rustic event last month, because it was such a huge success for us. We had never gotten to do an event in Dallas before with people that we knew, friends and family. And so it was really anything beyond what we could have imagined. It was incredible. So thank you all so much. We had fun too. It was a ton of fun. Clay Walker was great. And as far as building it to the next level, you know, I think that's kind of the great thing, is that we've never really had a specific plan. God's just kind of always guided our way. You know, we raised money this year to build a second home over there in Zambia. So that's really the only thing imminent on the horizon for us. But, you know, every year these amazing organizations present themselves, and these different projects keep presenting themselves. So I think we're on the no plan right now, which is great. And it's about right?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that I think that Kershaw's Challenge, we love partnering with organizations that are already on the ground doing incredible work, whether it's in Zambia or Los Angeles or Dallas, but they don't necessarily have the resources or the platform or are able to raise awareness like we are with Clayton's platform. And so I think that that's our biggest goal, is partnering with these unbelievable, rock solid organizations that that are doing incredible work on the ground floor, but, you know, want to build an orphanage but don't necessarily have the means to do so or able to raise awareness, or it would take them 10 years of fundraising to do so. So we're very project oriented. We love partnering with organizations to ask them, you know, what's a very specific, tangible project that we can come alongside. In West Dallas, they're trying to build this Field of Dreams, and doing a Little League baseball field is really important to them, because these kids are traveling, have to travel, get on buses and travel 30 minutes away in order to get to a game or a tournament. And so as a result of that, these kids are really turned off from playing baseball. And they're trying to build their after-school baseball and discipleship program so much to get these kids off the streets, not just sitting at their house while their parents work, to be able to have this after-school mentorship program for them. So that's why we're partnered with Mercy Street. It's taken us a couple years to raise the funds for this Field of Dreams, but we feel like, especially in 2015, they're going to break ground and be able to build this Little League baseball field that will kind of be the epicenter of the community, where even the adults can come and rally around their youth and cheer them on in baseball games. And hopefully the kids will be a lot more excited to be a part of organized sports and learn good work ethic, how to be a good teammate, and all the Christian principles as well that come in along with being a Christian athlete.
Yeah.
How can we help Kershaw's Challenge? Do you have a website?
Yeah, kershawschallenge.com. That's, it's got everything on there. Talks about all our past projects, all the projects we've done, where each dollar's gone to, all the money we've raised. So that's kind of everything right there. Yeah, thanks for asking, though. That's great. Maybe one more and call the... Yeah.
Do we commit a dollar amount for each time you ring somebody up? Is that how that works?
Yeah, definitely. You can do... whatever you want to do. We can take all sorts of different donations. It's really cool. We've had a few different people tell their stories on our website. We have a guy that... His challenge, he's a runner, so he donates, you know, per mile he runs. And what's really, really cool is we've had these kids that they want to tell their stories too. And, you know, they in Little League or whatever they're doing, whether they're getting a hit or getting an RBI or striking somebody out, they're donating, you know, part of their allowance or something, just which is really cool. You know, just that's really the goal. It's not, you know, not how much money we raise, is just to hear the stories of people doing what they love to do and being able to give money to something else, and that's pretty awesome. So that's what we like to hear. All right, well, thank you all very much. We really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. You guys hear this all the time. But you guys are really an inspiration. I mean, you guys are a real inspiration to me. I know I speak for all of us out here when I say that. So we're buying a copy of their book for all of you that are here. We have some copies here this morning. So if you hurry out of here, you'll be one of the people that gets one of those copies. If there's not a copy waiting for you when you leave, then at our next breakfast, which is February 15th, there'll be more copies there, and you can pick up one of those copies then. We'll have those right after Christmas, so if you're eager to go ahead and get it, shoot me an email, Matt Tuggle, and then you can come on up to the church, and we'll pick it up. But we're just so grateful for you guys for coming out this morning. We hope to see you at the next breakfast in February. We hope you have a great Christmas with your families, and let's thank the Kershaws once again.